Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and on the school holiday of Columbus Day, we will do two call-ins and an online chat about the new education reform movement. In an hour from now, we'll have a call-in on the question, are great teachers born or made? And at noon, we'll have a live online chat hosted by me on the larger question, do we know what works to turn around failing schools? There is a growing consensus that we do, as emphasized in the movie Waiting for Superman and elsewhere. So teachers and principals, call your colleagues, parents, call your friends. We will do a live online chat for everyone at noon on the question, do we really know what works to turn around failing schools? That'll be on our politics website. It's afreecountry.org. And by the way, grammar teachers take note, web addresses may not include apostrophes, so it's afreecountry.org with no apostrophe as it should be in the word it's. I know it'll feel horribly wrong, but it's afreecountry.org for our online chat on Do We Know What Works in Education coming up at noon. Let's preview that chat a bit right now. Our next guest, Linda Perlstein, is the curator of Slate Magazine's new project called The 21st Century Classroom. She is also the public editor for the Education Writers Association, where she writes the Educated Reporter blog, and is the author of two books, Tested and Not Much, Just Chillin'. Perlstein and Slate are soliciting your best ideas on how to modernize the American classroom. Hi, Linda. Welcome to WNYC. Happy Columbus Day.
Happy Columbus Day to you, too.
We've been collecting, by the way, comments on Facebook from people on how they are being taught or were taught about Columbus Day, since it can come from so many different perspectives. Evan writes, I was taught that he never told a lie and confessed to his father after he chopped down the cherry tree. No, wrong guy. Jason writes, I do remember asking the question how he could discover anything if there were people already there. Let's see. My schooling of Columbus, writes John, was definitely biased toward the hero image. As an Amerindian, I now know exactly what his arrival in the Americas actually meant. And Mina writes, growing up in the Dominican Republic, we learned about the three ships and his arrival in 1492, but we also learned about how he abused our Taínos, converted them into Christians, and in less than 30 years killed all the indigenous people. Well, he didn't personally do anything, but there is... was a lot of disease, et cetera, and he did some of the killing. And Mino concludes, I am always surprised that in the U.S. he is seen as a hero and even has his own holiday. So a few takes on the teaching of Columbus. But your starting point is that the classroom itself, the physical classroom, hasn't evolved in the past century. How has it not?
Well, if you went into a school classroom 100 years ago, you would see a rectangle and a whole lot of desks and chairs and a teacher at the front. And in the vast majority of schools today, that's still what you're going to see. We've come a long way in what we do in the room in some cases, but sometimes you wind up working against the form of the room to do that.
And listeners, we have about 10 minutes for this. I would love to hear from fifth grade teachers yourselves. How have you redesigned your fifth grade classroom, your physical classroom, or anyone else with any connection to this question? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Linda, some things have changed in a century, right? I mean, there's the open classroom movement, which began in the 1970s. When I was in school, we all sat in rows looking forward in fifth grade and in everything else. My kids in school, and I have a seventh grader now, have been seated largely in clusters of four or six or so facing each other. Is that just a minor change, in your opinion?
Well, teachers do a lot to move the desks around now. The open classroom is an interesting point you bring up because at the time, all these walls were removed with the thought that, oh, then we'll change the way we educate children. It didn't happen the way it needs to happen, which is saying we want to educate children a certain way, so we're going to change the building around that. So what you wound up was architects trying to force changes on teachers who wound up teaching the same way they always did. They just had to deal with a lot more noise. Now you do see teachers, you know, creating a corner in their room for reading, having a little table in the corner for meeting with students individually. But I'll give you one example of how teachers are supposed to do things differently, and the physical building doesn't allow for that. These days, teachers are supposed to work together. You know, they're supposed to get together to talk about kids. They're supposed to be collaborating and looking at data. Most teachers still have their desk in their own classroom, and there's no good place for teachers to get together and sit with the data and sit with their ideas and work together.
And on Slate, you're asking readers to give you their designs for revamping the classroom, everything from shovel-ready projects to fanciful entries. And I know the project has just begun, so what are you hoping to get from the entries, and have you received anything yet worth mentioning?
Most of the things we've received so far are really based around technology, how to bring technology into the classroom in a meaningful way, and I think that's great. But I want to emphasize that we're not limiting this to technology or something that actually could be done. If you think class should be held in a tree, we'd love to hear why. If you think it's simply a matter of making the chairs more comfortable for students, that's important too. If you just want to make the environment more welcoming, if you actually want to sort of knock down the walls and think of things in a different shape, tell us why that's a good idea. Sometimes just one piece of furniture can really change the way a classroom works. Like, there are private schools that use, instead of having desks at all, they just have one seminar table. And so everyone sits around the seminar table in every single classroom and has a small group seminar. That's one piece of furniture, but it really drives instruction for how class is taught every day.
How many students could you accommodate in that physical setting?
Well, that goes from about 12 to 20, but, you know, you may think that the best way of teaching kids is to have 70 kids in a lecture and then break them out into groups of five with teacher aides or something. And if you want to do that, what physical space would you need to do that? You may think that 30 is the right number of kids in the class. You may think that 2 is the right number of kids in the class. And all of those ideas are ones we want to hear about.
All right. Linda Perlstein from Slate is leading a project to redesign the fifth grade classroom. How about your suggestions? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Mark in Demarest, you're on WNYC. Hi.
I am a retired English teacher, high school English teacher. In 1989, my students and I bought a huge seminar table, a big oval table, put it in my classroom, got rid of all the desks, and just had the chairs around the table. I ran a seminar for all the years that I taught until 2003. I have to say, the room gave its own message. As you walked into the room, you saw that you were going to be sitting across from other students, and you were expected to talk and participate, and you had to, in a way. The shy kids sat up right next to me, so they would lean back, I would lean forward. I wouldn't see them, so that became kind of the back of the room, but I knew where they were, mm-hmm. and, you know, had little private conversations with those kids, so I got them involved.
Kept them involved. Mark, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. Duke in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Duke.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. So you're a teacher?
Start talking.
Go.
Yes, I am.
Yes.
But I taught at all levels.
Talk about the classroom.
I think the primary thing is that it does have to be in a circle. Someone said either the desks should be in circles or having one large table. Although I think for younger kids, I think they probably need that little bit of separation.
If you have 25, 30 kids in a class, that is one huge circle. Oh, two circles.
Circles. Three circles, uh-huh. However many you need. I mean, I know there's a space issue because I see in most of these classrooms are all packed up on each other, so I'm not quite sure how that would go. But
because the circle makes them look at each other and interact, is that why?
Yes, I think so.
Thank you.
And I'd also like to say that I don't think that the teacher should have a fixed place.
The teacher should move around. Duke, thank you. Pat in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Pat.
Yes, Brian. Thanks for having me on. I'm a special needs teacher, in public schools, and I think the average special needs classroom could probably be implemented in a general ed classroom because my children have to be taught in very small groups.
Mm-hmm.
My classroom is set up to facilitate that with many different centers and many different stations for children on different levels. However, there is a problem with general ed because with our cash-strapped school systems, educational assistants, et cetera, are being cut all the time. And, you know, because we have such a multinational population, I think we need more assistance, but the taxpayer and the powers that be don't seem to think that the extra help is needed.
Pat, thank you. Now, Rona, in Nassau, you were a former teacher who tried to set up in a circle?
Yes, I had a very, very helpful principal. I'm sorry, I'm being sarcastic.
But
I thought it was very important for everybody to be able to see everybody else and nobody be at the top or the bottom. So I put my chairs in a large circle, and the kids had a very good time when we had discussion. They would be talking to each other. And when we didn't have discussion, they were able to manage to, you know, this is desks. They were able to manage to do their own work, and it worked very well for about 2 days until he saw it. And he said to me, "You can't have this." And I said, "Why not?" He said, "The custodians are complaining about moving the tables."
The bureaucracy gets in the way. That is a sad story. Well, we've got a minute left. Linda Perlstein from Slate. There's a little sampling of what people came up with on the spot for reinventing the fifth grade classroom.
Yeah, I think there's a few themes you hear. Number one, we shouldn't leave kids any place to hide, except to say that there should be places for kids to retreat in comfort when they need to focus. Just in my own personal opinion. Number two is that there's an incredible resistance to change in the education world, which is why we haven't seen much change before. And number three, there just are new ways, as a special education teacher brought up, of interacting with students. When you have more kids in the general classroom who have special needs, who meet one-on-one, even just working with every child in the classroom, there's a lot more small groups and one-on-one assessment. When you don't accommodate for that, you see a lot of people sitting on floors, a lot of adults sitting on tiny chairs, desks being dragged here and there, and these are all the kinds of things that we'd love to see people think about. And don't say the room's too big. You can knock out the walls for our project. There's no barriers to what you can do.
Linda Perlstein is curator of Slate Magazine's new project called The 21st Century Classroom. Thanks a lot for coming on and talking about it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And again, a reminder that at noon today, we'll have an online chat on what works in public education at itsafreecountry.org.